I'm grateful to our next presenter, Doug Rivers, who spent a lot of time informing many of us about the potential for more efficiently using protein in a variety of different applications, including a variety of human food applications. Doug and his ICM counterparts have been very gracious in hosting tours and providing good insight into some of the additional value-added opportunities, much as Steve did, but really focusing on fractionation and some of the things that can be done in that world of refining products for human applications as well. Doug and I, in one of the first meetings we had in the recent era, concluded that about 35 years ago we had met one another down in Kansas at a time when Gulf Chemical was actually operating one of the first biofuel advanced refineries. And Doug and I had a chance to reflect back on those early efforts, and I'm glad to see, as Steve pointed out, some of that sort of integrated activities come a long way in that period of time. Doug Rivers is going to be able to talk to us more about some of what they're doing at ICM now. He manages the facility. They have a Colwich in terms of their research and pilot operations, as well as the facility at St. Joseph, Missouri. He's Director of Research and Development for ICM. He's been instrumental in leading the company's development of technology and transition to commercial operations for food production as part of an adjunct to their ethanol-producing capabilities. Doug's been very active in a variety of different Kansas organizations, including the Governor's Innovation Consortium. Please welcome Doug Rivers.
So Steve, talk to you about one way of becoming more efficient and getting additional renewable energy out of a plant. And what I want to talk to you is another way of accomplishing the same type of efficiency improvements, whether they be in corn plants or milo plants or whatever other grain material that you might use as a feedstock. And we want to show you what we envision as a way to get from corn or milo to second generation ethanol from cellulose. So if you take a look at and this is kind of a busy slide, but if you take a look at what this shows, what our line of sight is relative to getting from a current dry grind grain plant over to, on the right side, a cellulose plant that will utilize energy crops, crop residues, and things along that line. And so we have a pathway lined out so that we believe the technology that we are developing will actually follow a logical sequence of improving efficiencies along the way, leading up to the utilization of cellulosic materials to make additional ethanol. So, typical Generation 1 plant. You just saw another picture of this plant out in Oakley, and you can tell by the color of the wet DDGs what's being used as feedstock. It's red, so you can guess that it's milo. And I'm going to point out that there are some advantages to this in some of the work we're doing to add the utilization of cellulose to an existing plant. This plant is a very typical. It's laid out. You walk into an ICM designed plant, they may face a different direction, but the layout's identical. So the first way that we see to start getting from a dry grind plant where you're grinding corn, milo, or a combination of the two, is to start doing some things to recover more of your starch so you can convert more of that to your targeted end product. And so there has been, over the course of the last year, a lot of noise in the marketplace relative to fine grinding. We've done some work that says really it's not just getting it more fine, it's actually controlling the grind that you get. And so we've come up with a technology that we call selective milling technology. And the picture on the right there shows how one of these looks in a plant. It's stacked to conserve space, so it's a relatively easy bolt-on to an existing facility. So the top platform has a paddle screen Second one is a disc mill. If you're familiar with any the grinding apparatus in a pulp and paper mill, these are very common in those mills. And then there's a recombination tank at the bottom, as well as some pumps. So the first thing at the top, this is really a separations device. By the time you've ground your corn and milo and you're coming into your plant with your mash, you've already got some fine material in there that gives you plenty of accessibility to the chemical bonds to break them down into the sugars that can be fermented. So there's no need to run that material through the mill again and requiring larger mills or more mills at a facility. And so we run through here, and the fine material and a lot of the water come straight through this screen that's in here. It bypasses the mill and then allows the material to go into the mill. So here's a kind of a close-up picture of a disc mill, and you can see that the line coming into the center of the mill is actually the feed line. So this is the material that is a larger particle size, and it's also somewhat dewatered, having come through the paddle screen. And there are two big discs in these pieces of equipment. They're about 36 inches in diameter, sometimes a little bit more. And you can either have one rotating disc or you can have two counter-rotating discs. And they have ridges, a variety of ridges, depending upon what you're trying to do with dams across the valleys, forcing material to come up over and through the very small space between those two discs. And so you can adjust that space between the discs to affect how you're impacting the feedstock that's coming through there. And really, when we start talking about improving the amount of convertibility you can get of your starch, it is all about the starch. And so there's a series here of micrographs of what the starch looks like. So if you have some raw starch that's slurried in the top left-hand corner, native starch, and as you heat that material up, you can begin to see that you start getting some fragmentation of the larger starch particles, and this allows the material to hydrate a little bit. And so, of course, as you progress through that temperature range, you would expect to see improved convertibility to sugars, and that's exactly what you see. The last, in the lower right-hand corner, once you add shear forces of a specific type of mill, you can see where you not only are you reducing particle size, but you're abrading the materials that are there, so you're really spreading them out, further increasing the surface area that's available and the chemical bonds that are available to be broken down into individual sugars. So that's why we say that it's not just grinding it finer and finer. Grinding finer to a point is part of the picture, but you have to have a complementary mechanism in your mill that's also going to abrade this material so that you really get the full impact of your milling treatment going towards improving the ability to hydrolyze the starch into sugars that can be fermented. So when we look at, and we've done a number of performance trials in a handful of plants, we've looked at what happens, and the big things are that we end up with less residual starch in spent grains or in the feed component as a co-product. And typically we see 20 to 50% less starch. In some cases we've seen as much as a 75% reduction. Well, you know, that's a pretty big range, 20 to 75, that's a lot. But there is a big variation from plant to plant, we all know that. So depending upon how your individual plant is being operated, you're going to see more or less residual starch coming over in your DDGs compared to what you're doing today. The real goal is to produce more ethanol. And we've observed a 1.5 to 3% increase on the whole. And as you also know, there's pretty good background noise in data coming from a production facility. And so it's a little bit difficult to measure this because of the background noise, but once you get enough data, you can start seeing trend lines and all. And these are the numbers that consistently come out, again, depending upon how your plant's running today, whether you'll get somewhere on the lower end of that towards the 1.5%, or you'll be more towards the upper end of a 3%. The other thing that it does that's important in today's market is that if you're recovering oil out of your system on the back end through a centrifuge system or whatever mechanism you might be using, you're going to see increased oil production. So this is going to go to the bottom line as well. Somewhere between 8 to 18% increase in production of oil from your existing grind. And here's some summary of trial data from plants that have a selective milling technology in them. If you look clear over on the right-hand column, the bottom line of this is, one, you're going to get about a little over a 2% on average increase in the gallons of ethanol you're going to get produced. You are going to see a drop in your amount of DDGs. And you're going to see that because we're taking additional starch out that would have gone into those. That's because the purpose is to go to ethanol. Well, in today's market, it may not exactly be the best thing. But if you look at trends of the industry and all year in and year out, this is what does make sense. We're clearly in an unusual market for DDGs right now. And then finally, an average of just over 15% increase in oil. And so that's a key to adding revenues to the bottom line. And these numbers are a little bit, unfortunately, a little bit fuzzy, and they're a little bit small even on a large screen. But over in the right-hand column, if you take what we just mentioned off that summary table and look at what the net added value is, if you have a capacity increase of 1%, you're going to be talking about a net average increase of revenue to the plant on an annual basis of just under $1.6 million. If you're at the upper end of that at a 3%, you're going to see roughly a $3.5 million increase of revenue to the bottom line. So from the standpoint of general operations, and maybe we have an aberration in market situations this year where it's a little bit off from that because of DDG prices, you're going to see significant additional dollars coming to the bottom line. And if you check the numbers in the green boxes, these calculations were actually done fairly recently. So when you start looking at corn prices of $8 and DDGs at $2.60 that we used here, we're in the ballpark of where we are today, at least. Now, if we look at fine grind and what may be claimed about what fine grind will do, and I'm going to go back in history as Todd referred to. Grinding finer, and just because you have cellulose in the form of your bran in the mix, just because you grind that finer does not make it available to convert that cellulosic material to ethanol. And there are some rumors out there of some organizations claiming that's true. Well, when I started doing this work back in 1976, we were actually looking at some other materials. We were looking at municipal solid waste, pulp and paper mill waste, all nice cellulosic materials. And I personally did a number of vendor tests with these materials. And some of the vendor testing I did was with the types of mills that are being used today to get a finer grind of material to recapture more starch as ethanol. So, just because I wanted to make sure my memory wasn't too bad after however many years that is, I hate to count them up, but it's back when we called things gasohol and we had lines of cars going around the block to get gasoline because of real shortages. So we ran quick little experiment using corn fiber to see what it would do. And so whether it is an untreated raw corn fiber or whether it's ground finely, you don't get much of anything. So I wouldn't stake any bets on them making any ethanol off of that. You still need to pre-treat the material if you're going to get cellulosic conversion. And most people out there that do cellulosic pre-treatment, it's a dilute acid, high pressure, high temperature process. So don't be misled that there's an opportunity there to get cellulosic ethanol from a finer grind material. It just doesn't work. So, coming back again to the line of sight, from the left side, we went to the first circle to the right of that, the selective milling technology. That then provides a platform that we can go to a number of different directions. One is further enhanced oil recovery through an advanced oil recovery system. And we're in the process of installing one of those systems in our pilot facility to do some optimization on that. This allows you to break the emulsion that's formed so that you can get even more oil out of your system that you have today. The next one to the right of there is fiber separation. And we're developing a fiber separation system that is done through wet methodologies that really gets you a very clean fiber. The plant that we work with today, Lifeline Foods, clearly their main products are food products going to the snack food industry, the brewers industry, and things like that. So with a dry grind system, we're already getting that fiber. It's not a very clean fiber. It has a lot of starch sticking to it. As much as 22 to 30% of the dry weight can be starch. So we need a better methodology, and we're pretty close to having something developed there that we think will be available by the end of the year. Well, when you get to there, you can start thinking about converting fiber to ethanol and collecting cellulosic rinds. So you may be aware, we had a corn or grain pilot plant that we built in the 2007-08 time frame. And in this diagram, the gold-colored items are those items that were in that original pilot plant. And the left half of the slide, not counting the two blue diagrams on the bottom, was about 10,000 square feet. And so we had the ability to come in, take mash from Lifeline Foods, do a variety of experimentation. We have 5 15,000-gallon reactors there where we can do fermentation, use one as a beer well, and then in the upper right-hand corner we have a distillation room so we can actually distill the ethanol off and run more or less as a 1 million-gallon-per-year ethanol plant would on a variety of grains using a variety of different mills to grind that material. So in the fall of 2010, we began construction on the rest of the facility. So we added roughly 15,000 more square feet of space inside the facility. And so all of the tankage that you see on the right in the light blue areas are all new tankage. There are three tanks on the upper right part of the middle that are three other fermenters that were new. And so we've added a significant capacity and using the original material to build a facility that will convert cellulosics to ethanol. So here's just a handful of pictures, and these are all, except for the distillation area, they're all part of the new construction. Feedstock receiving is really different from what you have with grains, where you have silos and it works real nice and everything flows like water more or less. It's a compact material, it's dense material, and as we all probably know in this room, you take a look at a bale of material and it's a whole lot less dense and it handles completely differently. It does not flow like water. And so we build us a little feedstock receiving tent, and we have a hammer mill inside there, and some forage equipment to feed it in. And we can grind that material down to a size that we can make use of it down in the millimeter range. And then our silo that we have there will hold roughly a 5-day supply for us. And we work with things. When you start going over to cellulose, you start talking about the plant more in how many tons per day of feedstock you can handle. And so our pilot plant is bigger than most pilot plants. We can handle 10 tons a day. So our silo will handle about 5 days supply for us when it's ground. The next system, if I want to draw a correlation to a grain plant, pretreatment is similar to the cook system. This is where we soften up the feedstock. We treat ours, as I said, with a dilute acid process with elevated temperature and pressure, which basically gets all of your hemicellulose, which is your 5 carbon sugars. None of these are present in grains. So mostly what you get is xylose out of that. And then you have your cellulose, which will be converted to glucose, the same sugar that comes from starch, by enzymatic conversion. And so that happens over, once we adjust pH, that happens in our hydrolysis reactors. We produce a sugar syrup, and then we ferment those to ethanol. We come up with a high enough ethanol stream that we can go straight into a traditional distillation column. So, the way we see cellulose happening is we believe that the bran off of corn or milo is going to be the first cellulosic feedstock. And so in a market like today where the prices of your feedstock is up, you want to get as much out of it as you can. One way to do that is convert that bran over to your primary product. And so about 6.5% by dry weight of corn is bran. What can you expect to get out of it? Well, as an industry, if we were to convert all of our existing ethanol plant capacity to be able to use bran off of corn and milo, we'd add about 1.5 billion gallons of cellulosic ethanol that would be available also for cellulosic RINs. The other thing is that when you look at numbers on constructing cellulose conversion facilities, they're a little bit more expensive than a grain plant. But when you access your bran off your corn or milo, you get significantly reduced costs of capital that's required to get to the same end. You also are able to reduce chemical inputs, and you have some opportunities to have a flexible rollout. So today, the fermentation organism we use is different than what you use in your plants. It will ferment all of the sugars coming from cellulose simultaneously to ethanol. Well, we're working on the regulatory issues for that so we can get it approved, not to produce ethanol, but so that it can go into the DDGs as a component of the feed. And so we expect that we'll have approval on that late this year, early next year is what we're told. So, if you want to roll that out right now, you can do that. You just would not capture the 5 carbon sugars as ethanol. Those 5 carbon sugars would be captured as part of your energy value going into your DDGs. And then, if you're looking at your primary product, you're increasing ethanol yield per bushel 7 to 10%. And again, that range depends on how clean your fiber is that you convert. If you have a system like Lifeline Foods has, that you're seeing 20 to 30% of your dry weight of your bran is starch, you're going to be at the upper end. If you have a very clean fiber, you're going to be down at the lower end. If you look at what you would have to do to add this on to your system, once you have the ability to separate the fiber out, the two big things you have to add is pretreatment, because you just don't have that operation in your plants today. And you would likely have to add some capacity in the way of tankage to do your hydrolysis in. You might have to add some yeast propagation capacity, depending on what you have today. And you might have to add a high-pressure boiler, depending upon what your boiler's capabilities are today. So, that's the low-hanging fruit. We can get to that. That is really a bolt-on type addition. It's still part of the same plant. If you switch over to thinking about what we call a co-located operation, where you would make use of energy crops and crop residues, you have a co-located design. Now you have a fully functional, independent cellulose converting plant sitting right next to the independent grain plant that's producing ethanol. But you have process lines that go back and forth across the fence, making both operations a lot more efficient. So if you look at these, the top right-hand corner, I don't know if you can see the guy standing in there. You can see his face about halfway up in the picture. This is energy sorghum. This stuff ends up, you know, sometimes close to 20 feet tall. You cut it once a year. And the bales that you actually see in the center are 1,600-pound, 3x4x8 bales that were done by one of AGCO's experimental combine baler systems. One thing I might mention is, because we're dealing with feedstock availability this year, cost of corn and all, that's one of the reasons we have a feedstock strategy for cellulose like we do. If you look at the three feedstocks that we have, switchgrass is a perennial crop, which is going to help on your greenhouse gases and all that, because you only plant it once every 7 to 10 years. Energy sorghum is an annual crop, so you can kind of use it as an adjustment to what you believe you're going to need to make up the difference between your base of energy crop and crop residues, so you don't leave your plant short of feedstock. And then corn stover is simply used as an example of an ag residue. It could be sorghum stover, it could be wheat straw, it could be any ag residue, really. And this is what we envision our co-located model looking like. Some of you may have seen this before because we've used it in a number of presentations over the last year. But it shows, if you look down the middle of the page, how the different lines in between a grain plant and a cellulose plant can actually go back and forth and provide real synergies of operations that improve the efficiencies of the grain side as well as the cellulose side. Mentioned our pilot plant. We did our first run back right after the first of the year. And pre-treatment we knew was going to be the toughest spot because it was the most unknown. And so just a couple of pictures here to show some of the mess we had for the first 6 months of operation. I mean, we had the top picture is in a condenser, and we had solids come up, and it was just a gooey mess in there. And then the bottom picture is actually one of our reactors, and that beehive-looking thing is actually a honeycomb of the solid corn fiber that we were running through there, whatever that is, that just actually stuck to the baffles and impeller shafts in that reactor. Well, as the slide says, we had a lot of fouling issues. We had issues with level sensors. We had issues with load cells. We obviously had some issues with things getting plugged up. But we were able to solve all those. And prior to starting our run in late February, we ran for about 8 weeks. And just a couple of slides real quickly on conversion. These were not done in the lab. These were done in the pilot plant. These were done in 30,000-gallon reactors. And if you just take a look at the solid lines, these are all of these are conversions, but they're using two different enzyme systems, both from Novozymes. And you can see in these the difference between the newest generation acylase enzymes and the previous version. And this is only a one-year difference. See the impact of that. Their CTEC2 enzymes, we would get about an 86% conversion on corn fiber. This year when we ran their CTEC3, we got 98% conversion with a 20 to 30% less dosage of material. So they've made some big improvements. 12% conversion improvement in that period of time, which translates into about a 30 cent a gallon reduction in costs. So that's a big deal. At the same time, we were able to reduce the severity of our pretreatment. So there's energy savings. And so this a picture of about 75% of our R&D team. Some of this work was funded by the DOE. I'm obligated to say that since we have a DOE contract. Monday, we're going to be starting our second big campaign. We're actually going to be running in 500,000 gallon fermenters of Lifeline Foods to prove out the use of corn fiber as a feedstock, just at the same percentages it would happen in a typical corn or milo ethanol plant. If you think you might be interested in seeing this type of operation, we're going to be taking some people through during the month of September. If you want to contact me or someone else at ICM, we'll work to try to get you a tour so you can see what a functioning cellulose to ethanol pilot plant would look, or actually production plant would look like. Thank you.